Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken Edwards with the National Coalition of Labor. To my right, Ed Maher, National Coalition of Labor. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken.
How's it going?
Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
We missed you last week.
And no Phil Davidson today. Phil's out working.
Yep, on his golf game.
Swing.
Yeah.
So, last week, I was in Sacramento, California.
The beautiful, the SAC.
Is that what they call it, the SAC?
Yes, they call it the SAC.
Did you just make that up?
No.
So, it's the capital of California.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I knew that. Well, I think elementary students all over the world know that.
This was not what I expected. It's flat. Agriculture.
I wouldn't have thought that.
It was crazy. It looked like once you flew over the mountains, it's like really pretty. You're like, wow, this is awesome. And then you fly into Sacramento and it's like the Midwest.
Yeah.
However, boy, I got to tell you, housing booming.
For sure.
Booming out there. The weather was beautiful. And so, you know, and we'll be talking about this more, but three massive operating engineer locals are bringing the National Coalition of Labor into their unions. Mm-hmm. Why, Ed? To try and shore up their public sector.
Right. There have been a number of unions that have been really successful using the program to get fee payers, back objectors, yep. Janus yes. participants, whatever yes. you want to call them, yep. and right-to-work states to come back into the union, and it works.
So California, you know, obviously is not a right-to-work state, and these three operator locals, it's Local 3,
Local
501, 12. Not 12.
Or 39, I'm sorry.
39, and 501, they have what's called Unit 12, and they have a statewide bargain unit of 11,500 state employees, everybody from, you know, admins to what they call Caltrans, which is like our version of DOT, mm-hmm. Highway departments, things like that. And they have, I want to say, over 3,000 people that don't pay dues.
Right.
Post-Janus. So,
because public sector members across the country
don't have to pay dues.
Are able to do that because yeah. of this Supreme Court case, yeah. Janus.
Yes. Horrible, nonsense. Horrible case. Should be overturned. Not in our lifetime. But you do the math and go like, okay, if I bring in 150 people or 1,000 people, whatever that number is, times blank number of dues, I just paid for the coalition for everybody. For 30,000 people.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, it's just sort of cost-benefit analysis. So I went out there and I did some training and just gave my opinion as to how to sort of rectify the situation and how at Local 150, you know, where you and I came from, we represented public employees and what worked for us, what didn't work, and things like that. So yeah. it was pretty cool, a cool experience. Like I said, I wish it had been in L.A.,
but instead, or San Diego.
Yeah, but instead it was in Sacramento. So, and by the way, the hotel I stayed at,
yeah,
they had a restaurant.
Okay.
You know what kind of food they served?
California food?
Indian.
Interesting choice.
Really weird.
What, was that the only restaurant in the hotel?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's an interest. You don't see that very often.
It's an airport hotel. Huh. And it was owned by Indians. And
okay.
they had an Indian restaurant. And
did you try it?
Absolutely not. I don't like Indian food.
Why not? Have you ever tried Indian food, or are you like a little kid?
Stomach egg on a plate.
Do you know that to be true? Have you tried this and had it gone wrong?
Yeah, I have. I have a very sensitive stomach head.
Yeah, right.
I swear to God, it's true. So anyway, that was my experience in Sacramento, and that's why I was gone. But really cool stuff happening with the coalition. Now we are literally on each coast.
Yeah.
And so moving towards the center, if you will. But things are going really, you know, knock on wood, swimmingly in the world of the coalition, growing in leaps and bounds. While we're talking about that, we had a dinner this week, Ed, you and I,
yeah,
with Voya.
Yeah, that provides our life insurance for our members.
And Coker Insurance Group. And, you know, I don't I don't like doing those things, to be honest with you. I think you know that. I hate going to, you know.
The pageantry of it all is
kind of over for you. I get that. It's just, I don't know.
I like a meeting. I like an email even better.
Yeah, I like a Zoom call pretty much, yeah. When it comes to vendors, I love going out and talking to the unions and meeting with the guys and meeting with the powers that be. That stuff I love. But, like, when it comes to, you know, the vendors and stuff, you know, I obviously we need them. They are the backbone of what we do. But I just don't like, you know, having a big steak dinner and, you know, that kind
of
stuff.
In the course of that dinner, though, we did find out about some amazing things that are now available.
That's why I'm bringing it up. And we're going to – I think what we'll do is we'll drill down later on that.
Let's save that for later in the show.
For sure. Or not even in the show. Maybe we have Voya come on.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
They don't come on. But what you guys are going to hear are some brand-new benefits for every single coalition member – active, not retired, or retired that has the supplemental life insurance. And really just mind-blowing, cool things that Voya is rolling out. So we're going to have a whole bunch of sort of really good news to share. And I'm really glad that I went to that dinner, to be honest with you. Number one, the food was great. Number two, it was fun. And it made me feel important. Because they brought in people from all over the country to come and have dinner at this thing.
Right.
And it was at a fancy place, which was called what? What was it called? The
University Club. Yeah.
Holy cow. Beautiful. That was really, really cool. I've never been there. Have you?
I had not.
That was awesome. Like, you got a taste of how the other half lived.
You know what I mean? For a few short hours.
Yeah, for a few hours. I was like, whoa, this place is, you have to wear a jacket inside, and, you know, it was pretty fancy, and you had this, you know, cool thing overlooking Michigan Avenue. So it was fun. But here, my point being is that sort of like cool things are happening in the coalition as we continue to grow and expand our footprint, you know, everything from the annuity to this cool stuff that Voya is rolling out, you know, to us being in California and just trying different things. Premise, obviously, hopefully expanding their footprint with us.
Yeah.
So just a lot of cool stuff happening in the National Coalition of Labor Land, if you will. So get on our website if you want to follow. Send us an email if you want more information. You can do that at info@coalitionoflabor.org. You could always call us, 800-433-2099. Either Ed or myself will answer that call directly.
And you can talk to us about how much you love the radio show, too.
And you can certainly mention the radio show. You know, when I told them out in California that we have a radio show, they're like, what? They let you on the radio? Huh. Like, well, yes.
3 years plus, and yes. We haven't been thrown off yes, or fired by the FCC.
We're on our best behavior, right?
If this is what you can call our best behavior.
It's the Lord's Day. It's also Memorial Day weekend.
That's true. And today is also a very special birthday for my lovely wife.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Today's her birthday?
Claire turns, you know.
Don't say that. Something. Say it. She turned something?
Yeah, it's her 20th birthday today.
I love it.
Yeah.
Good for her. That's awesome. Well, happy birthday to Claire.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, listen, we'll take a quick break, and then there's this ton of labor news that we have to get to today. So
it's going
to
be a good one, folks.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. So, Long Island Railroad, right? Strong Island, if you will, where I'm from.
Hey-o.
Yeah. So that's the railroad that goes from Manhattan all the way out to the Hamptons in Long Island. And they have been at odds for 3 years, no raises, just not getting anywhere. I think it's called the MTA, if I'm not mistaken, Metropolitan Transit Authority, stonewalling, won't come to the bargaining table. There's a coalition of unions there, right? BLET is one of the bigger ones. It's Brotherhood of something or other.
I'm going to let you hang here. I'm going to watch you try and figure it out.
Brotherhood of Locomotive and Engineer Technicians.
Hey, that sounds pretty good to me.
That's pretty close to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. BLET.
Give that a B+.
They simply weren't coming to the table. There had not been a strike in, I don't know, since like Governor Cuomo days in the 1990s. So you're talking like 30, 40 years. And you're coming up on Memorial Day. You're coming up on a World Cup happening in New York.
Right.
Right. And you want to talk about leverage. You shut down the only way that people are getting from point A to point B. Because now you got to try and get on buses, or now maybe you have to drive. A lot of these people don't have cars in New York. Mm-hmm. It's a New York phenomenon. People don't have cars. I know
cheap
people
to own, expensive to park.
I know people that don't have driver's licenses and have never driven their entire lives.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really weird. So they had a lot of leverage, and that strike lasted for 3 whole days. And all of a sudden, you know, sure enough, there was a deal. Deal happened, and you know, one of the issues. Was obviously wages, right? So so they got a contract that had retroactive raises, a 4.5 pay increase for 2026, some lump sum payments, preservation of work rules, etc. And one of the other issues was overtime, right? These guys are working a lot of overtime. So people are like, oh my God, you know that an MTA worker, a Long Island Railroad worker, makes $150,000. Whoop-de-doo. Big deal, right? They're working for it, and they're working a ton of overtime. Why are they working overtime? Because they're understaffed.
Right.
Hire more people.
They've been working on the railroad.
Good one. I like it. So anyway,
Have you seen the... like the systems, they have pictures every now and then, like in the New York Times, of the control rooms of the subways and the train systems around greater New York City.
Yeah.
And I mean, it looks like something that was put together in like the 1940s, and that's because it was.
Yeah.
You know, they've got like a 90-year-old German guy who's like the last known person who knows how to work this thing. But I mean, God, the challenges of trying to maintain a transit system in a city like that.
Well, it's so impossible to redo.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And you can't shut it down because, as you said, everybody's...
There's 400,000 people using it every day.
Yeah, so you have to keep this older system working, and
right.
That falls upon these workers.
With, like, Band-Aids.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and also, by the way, you know, especially on weekends, on the way out to the Hamptons or on the way out to Long Island, I think, I don't even know if they have the bar car anymore, but they used to. There was a fight every 5 minutes on that thing.
Can you imagine? There's no place.
Angry New Yorkers,
yeah.
You know, packed on a train, we're just getting off of work, or just want to go home, or wherever they're going. Just, you
know, there's no place in the world that I don't want to be more than the bar car on the Long Island Railroad on a Friday.
And the other great thing about the Long Island Railroad is when you go from point A to point B, there's always one stop. We have to get off and switch trains. You know where that stop is? Jamaica, Queens, where I went to high school. The worst neighborhood in all of New York City.
Well, it's nice because you don't have to walk from one station to the other. You have to run from one station to the other.
It's true, man. This is unbelievable. So, yeah. Anyway, but look, kudos to those guys.
Yeah, it's great news.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Stand strong. And that is a you know, textbook situation of where the union knew, the workers knew, they had the leverage, they struck when the iron was hot, they figured it out, they were well planned, they were well spoken, they went to the meetings of the MTA, they gave great public comment, and for a large part, the public was on their side. And I think that helped push this thing through. So they got a deal, good for them. In terms of, you want to hear another strike?
I do.
That I don't think is going to be particularly successful, but you never know. I don't know. And that is, there's a company, there's a store called REI. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, it's the outdoors co-op, you know, hiking gear, bikes, whatever. Kayaks, if you're looking for one of those, everybody.
Expensive outdoor gear.
I only have ever bought anything from REI when it is on the clearance rack of the clearance section. Yeah.
So REI is a co-op.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a company.
Right.
It's not publicly traded.
So you would think that these are usually some pretty crunchy organizations that
they certainly,
you know, B-Corps that do the right thing.
They
for their
certainly
employees.
Have. They hold themselves out as, you know what their motto is? I'm going to read it to you. A life outdoors is a life well lived. And
is that meaning like you should, if you work there, you should go outside with a picket sign?
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Sorry, man.
your life, if you work at REI, is going to be outside on the sidewalk.
Yeah, grab a sign and head outdoors.
That's your outdoor experience.
That's funny.
You're going to be holding a picket. And if it's cold, I will sell you a pair of $80 gloves.
Yeah.
And so it's like this... you know, like I said, this co-op, so you join, right? I'm like, I'm going to join REI, and then I get to shop there, and, you know, I'm a member, and I'm a part owner, and blah, blah, blah. We're so liberal, and sure enough, what do they do like every other corporation? 11 stores went union, and they are fighting tooth and nail and, of course, have no contract. This has been 2 or 3 years in the making so far. Nothing, not a single bit of movement. I'm not even sure they're recognizing the union. Just the typical anti-union playbook from REI.
So REI is their argument that they would have to raise prices, like that $80 pair of gloves would be $180.
You know, they haven't even said that.
Yeah. You know, I don't think they're worried about low prices at REI.
No. You know,
I can't afford to go outside.
The life well lived is going to be, for the if you work in there, you're going to be homeless because you can't afford a house.
It's just cheaper to sit on my couch than go walk around. I can't even afford like the big stick that you know, the hikers, the hiking stick, I think.
You can go in the park and get a stick.
Those are dirty.
Ridiculous.
Yuck.
But, you know, they pay $20 an hour.
Yeah,
$18 an hour.
It's like Trader Joe's.
And these
smile for the customers.
These are high profile. They're not in, let's put it this way, they're not in underprivileged, underserved neighborhoods. They're in fancy places.
That's for sure.
Los Angeles, California, Chicago. They're very expensive. And, you know, to make the argument that, I don't even know what their argument is. You know, we want a direct relationship with our partners.
Yeah.
You know, they're not employees. They're always partners when it comes to this kind of stuff. But shame on the REI. Like, you know, put your money where your mouth is. If you're really earthy crunchy and you're liberal and you're a co-op, if you will, and you're not a company, then, you know, then let's give these guys a contract, right?
And I'll say this. I mean, REI is one of those companies that doesn't cater to sort of, you know, the lower half of, let's say, earners in America, right? They're targeted toward people in the upper income brackets.
There's no question about it.
And those folks are spending money at a record pace while sort of the rest of America is struggling to, you know, buy drugs.
We can't afford to go to REI, right? I mean, it's just that simple. You're 100% right. They're targeting people like a well-lived life is a life lived outside. You know, you should buy this, you know, $280, you know, paddle for your $400 kayak, you know, on your houseboat that you have at your lake house.
Yeah, but it's a carbon fiber paddle, which makes the paddling easier, Ken.
But your point is 100% at it, and that is, like, we're catering towards the rich. You know, that's our market. But here's the thing, once again, right? There are 50 REI stores around, 50 in the country, and 11 of them are union. Mm-hmm. And the REI workers have called for a boycott during this, I guess, Memorial Day.
They have a big anniversary sale or something.
Yeah, something like that, right? And so I have, I mean, I'm on a 100% boycott of REI forever.
I was already doing it before it was cool.
It's called not being able to afford it.
Preliminary boycott.
Yeah.
It's like I'm boycotting private yachts. Unless I'm riding on one.
But here, I got to go back to this again. You got to, like, look, you can call for a boycott, and is that going to move the needle? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think REI is going to miss a beat. You represent 11 out of 45 stores. Are you picketing every single store? I don't know the answer to that. You should be, though, if you're not. And are you really, like, what about their deliveries, right? Are you following trucks? Are you doing kind of things that, you know, that need to get done if you want to effectuate a strike, hurt them economically?
Yeah.
And so are you doing those things? You have to think creatively. So, you know, and we wish them well. So we'll be, you know, we'll come back and we'll talk more about that. All right. We'll take a quick break. And then I want to tell you, we're going to have a Barely Legal segment. Which is always fun because I barely know what I'm talking about. And then we're going to talk about a horrible person that you guys talked about last week. And
back-to-back villain of the week.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You guys were, what do they call it? Prescient.
Prescient.
Prescient, as I said. And then I want to talk about some positive news, something that we've
been
covering.
Time.
Yeah, something we've been covering for a bit. So we'll be back with more of the Workers' Mic and talk about all of those three things in just 1 minute right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Workers' Mic. More show to come, sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. So there was a report that came out, I think it was from The Guardian, but it had some data driven from the Economic Policy Institute, and I forget who else it was, but sort of independent verification of the fact that companies right now are spending $1.2 billion or to $1.5 billion a year in union busting.
Right. They call it union avoidance counselors and consultants. There are attorneys, just all these different tools to stop their companies from going union in cases where the workers have expressed an interest in forming a union.
And now I think that one law firm I think you mentioned, and I'm not even going to say their name.
Littler Mendelsohn. Okay. There's a lot of jokes to be made about Littler Mendelsohn because of the sound of their name and the tie to a failed Austrian painter.
We won't make any of those jokes.
No.
But they are opening up, what, like a think tank or something?
They've created something called the Workplace Policy Institute, which basically you can go on their website. This is crazy. I wouldn't advise anyone to go on their website, but that's why I did it for you, folks.
Yeah.
The Workplace Policy Institute, you can get in business with them, and they will lobby on your behalf. At any level, they will prepare testimony if you want to go lobby before Congress about changes to the labor system, which if anybody out there listens to our show every week, you can see that America's labor law system is broken.
It's already broken.
You know, the idea
of the whole thing. So what do they want to do, break it more?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the idea is to facilitate unions, to encourage collective bargaining, and there's nothing but discouragement going on with collective bargaining. And you've got folks like Littler Mendelsohn out there just trying to create think tanks, create lobbying groups. I'm sure they're, you know, very affordably priced, Ken.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, yeah, for a white shoe law firm now doing lobbying and PR work.
Well, here, I have a question. Isn't there a world in which Company A, let's say Company A for Amazon, spends, you know, multi-millions and millions and millions
last of dollars. Last year it was $27 million by Amazon alone.
Fair enough. There you go. Spends that money on union busting.
Yes.
Union avoidance, right? Uh-huh. Isn't there a world in which the shareholders of Amazon say, that's not a good spend of our money? You're not being, you know, fiduciaries to corporate responsibility to raise share prices. Instead, you're actually giving us a black eye, and you're spending money that, had you recognized the union, it probably would have cost you $2 million or, you know, $10 million or whatever that number is.
Mm-hmm. I think whatever Amazon's argument to that would be, it's going to be the other side of the coin, where they'll say, if we recognize one group as union, then we'll have 50 and it'll cost us $1 billion. So we're spending $27 million to
save a billion. I think somebody should take them to task and make them prove that. And so
I don't disagree.
I'm going to buy a share of Amazon.
You're going to the meeting?
I'm going to buy a share. I'm going to go to the meeting, and I'm going to stand up and say, excuse me, Mr. whoever. Is Bezos still the guy?
Yeah. Well, I think there's somebody else now. I forget who it is, but
whatever.
Bezos is too busy with his yacht, his lovely wife.
The meeting is actually on his yacht. That's how big it is.
Right.
So, but anyway, I'm going to buy a share, and I'm going to do that.
You should do that.
I'm going to try. So, all right. Anyway, that was in the news. What else was in the news? You want to do Barely Legal, or you want to do something like positive?
I mean, I love good news, but if you tempt me with some Barely Legal, I'm never going to say no, Ken.
All right, here's Barely Legal, right? Kroger, which is a grocery store chain.
That owns Jewel locally.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, and they own, you know, different chains all over the country.
Okay, so they're massive, right? So they had a contract expire, I believe it was with the United Food and Commercial Workers, and the contract expires, which is, you know, in normal course of business, contracts expire, and you continue to negotiate, hopefully in good faith, while you work towards getting a new contract. Kroger decided to stop taking dues out from employees' paychecks, thereby trying to starve out the union and hurt them economically, so they didn't have the wherewithal to negotiate the contracts and, you know, crush them, right? So that was found to be illegal.
Under a Biden era rule.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A case from the labor board. And by the way, it's always sort of been the law, which is you have to maintain the status quo while you're negotiating, you know, for either a first contract or a second contract or et cetera, unless the contract specifically says otherwise.
Right.
Right? So
it's like getting divorced. Once you get the filing, you can't just set all the other person's clothes on fire and stop paying the mortgage.
Wait, you can or can't?
Cannot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The status quo. I don't know if you ever had that thrown at you, Ken.
Now you know.
Some people that have.
But here's the barely legal part that I think is just, I mean, just nutrageous.
Yeah.
And that is one of the board members said, yeah, I mean, that's the ruling today, but as soon as we get our Republican buddies on board, we're going to change that.
That is exactly what the NLRB spokesperson said.
It's unbelievable.
We had to find this way, but yeah, as soon as we get our third Republican appointee, we will overturn it.
Don't you worry, Krogers of the world, we're going to take care of you. So,
isn't that crazy, though, that they say, like, because to overturn an old ruling, you have to have a new case.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, they're going to have that case.
So they're just saying the agency is saying we're going to change it. We just don't have a case, but we're going to. So they're just predicting. They're telling you what they're going to do without looking at the merits of any of the arguments coming forward. The Fox is it's the Fox House. It's not even the.
So here's my ready. Here's my fix. I will never come to you with a problem without a solution.
That's not true at all.
That's not true at all. But I happen to have a fix here. I'll come to you with many problems with no solution.
Yeah.
But here's my fix, and I've been saying this for a long time, and you're starting to see unions do this already, and that is get away from the employer having anything to do with the union's coffers. Why do we need the employers to take dues from our members and ship it off to the union?
Right.
In this day and age, we got Venmo, we got Zelle. If it's an hourly rate or whatever, you can do the calculation. We have all this technology. Just have the member go click and have it come out of their bank account once a month. Because that check, by the way, that they're getting, a check, mm-hmm. it's no longer a physical check. They're getting a direct deposit. So what they're doing is the company is direct depositing the paycheck into the worker bee's bank account. And then they're taking, holding some back, and then direct depositing that money into the union's bank account. So now here I am negotiating against a company, and they're the ones collecting my money.
Well, yeah, it's been done this way forever because for unions, it was just easier to do it that way.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
But the answer is, I think that it's the hard work is worth it, because when something happens where a Supreme Court ruling or a state, you know, law is passed that says that a company can do this, all of a sudden all your eggs are in that basket.
That's right.
And they just took away your basket.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, so, talk AFG or, you know, any of these.
All day, every day. Get ready, right? Because it's coming your way. So start thinking ahead of the game, and you know, let's stop. Stop relying on employers who are oftentimes the enemy, mm-hmm. unfortunately, and
not always, but often.
Yeah, not always, but yeah, but often. Relying on them to pay the union, it just doesn't make any sense.
Anyway, yeah.
So you want to hear some more good news?
I do.
That wasn't really good news. Good news is housekeepers in New York.
Yeah,
their hotel workers union, and I believe most of it's Unite Here,
mm-hmm.
Just negotiated the base pay. That will now be, at the end of the contract, $60 an hour, over $100,000 a year.
And that's for hotels, right?
For hotels.
That's awesome.
How cool is that?
Have you ever stayed in a hotel in New York? I know you have.
But, yeah, absolutely.
When your mom kicks you out of the basement?
Well, that's when I stay in the car. And if it's the summer, I sleep on the bench.
Yeah, well, they are some nice benches. You make a lot of friends out there in the middle of the night.
Yeah, you don't want to be sleeping outside in New York. But so these and people are, oh, my God, housekeepers making $100,000. That
you're already,
is terrible.
You're already paying $500 a night.
Rooms are gonna raise the rates and blah 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 blah.
Like they haven't been already.
Please, it's already outrageously expensive. They just finally the housekeepers got a little piece of the pie. And by the way, once again, the same thing as in like Techland and in Silicon Valley. You can't afford to live there, right? You can't afford to be a housekeeper and make less than $100,000 if you want to live anywhere near your place of employment.
When I read the news, that was the first thing that I thought of was. $100,000 a year is just like the bare minimum of what it would cost to live within a sort of transit distance from working at, say, like a Midtown Manhattan hotel.
Right. Yeah. You know? There's no question
about
that.
So these people are not getting high on the hog, or not getting,
Not living high on the hog.
Yes. Thank you.
They got free family health care. They got pension contributions. They got child care and housing assistance funds. They got strong workplace protections and workload rules. They killed it. And so kudos to them. I know we got a strong Unite Here local one right here in Chicago.
That's for sure. They've been on the show many times.
Absolutely. Good friends of ours. So I just want to say congratulations to those housekeepers. They deserve every speck that they get, because you want to talk about a job that is not probably the most pleasant job in the world, and that is cleaning up people's hotel rooms.
Yeah, I mean, when they roll into, you know, knock on your door at 11 o'clock in the morning and, you know, nobody answers, so they figure that they can come in and clean it only to find you passed out in there, Ken. I mean, it's no fun.
That is fun or not fun?
Not fun. Okay, it's not fun. I'm going to be very clear.
Sorry, not fun. All right, check this out. We've been talking about the this Fast Labor Contract Act, FLCA, Fast Labor Contract Act. So what that means, Ed, is that under this law, if a union, a brand new union, gets certified
by a vote, just like regular
unions get certified by a vote or by voluntary recognition, which doesn't happen anymore, really, that within, if you don't have a you have to start negotiations within 10 days. And if you don't have a contract, within 90 days, you go to 30 days of what's called mediation. They bring in a federal mediator, or if there still one exists, through the FMCS. I'm not even sure that
the FMCS, I think, doesn't even have an office anymore.
It's outrageous.
It's a pity.
And that needs to be brought back in a big way, especially if a bill like this passes. And then if you can't get a contract, it goes to binding arbitration, and the arbitrator rules on what that contract will look like. Doesn't say winner take all for everything, either the union, or it goes piece by piece, wages, pension, health insurance, and simply puts together a contract, and that's the way it works. And it would be a game-changing law for unions and workers. And of course, it is being fought tooth and nail,
no question,
by ABC and the, you know, whatever, the Chamber of Commerce and you name it, businesses are fighting this. But It was stagnant until a couple of days ago. They got enough votes, signatures, to send it out to the floor on what's called a discharge petition. And where did we learn that? We learned that from the Epstein files.
That's right. So. Yeah, something that never gets used, but has been used now like 50 times.
A million times,
because
right?
The Speaker of the House will not call anything for a vote that is good for workers.
And what's it doing? It's forcing a vote.
Yeah.
They got 218 signatures. It is forcing a vote.
Which is a good thing. I mean, make everybody pick a side. Go on the record for where they stand.
Either you're with workers or you're not.
Yeah, you can't say like, oh, I'm for unions, and then vote against this. I mean, it's not often that these things actually come to a vote and unions can see, you know, who's on our side and who's just feeding us a line. But
both Dems and Republicans, by the way. Because look, you know what, Ed? It takes normally 450 to 500 days to get a first contract, if you get a first contract. And I think only 45% of new unions get a first contract. Look at Amazon. Look at Starbucks. Mm-hmm. Look at REI. Look what happened to our friends at Medieval Times when we started. They're all just getting decimated.
Just plain,
right?
Evil Times.
Now it's Evil Times. That's a pretty good one.
Thanks.
I like that.
I just came up with that.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Very impressive.
Right on the spot.
Thanks.
Because unions generally don't get a contract,
right?
And that's what they do. They wait you out, they starve you out, they play the waiting game, they refuse to negotiate, etc. This, like that, would change the world.
This dovetails nicely in with what we were talking about earlier about the the anti-union spending, because that report from the Economic Policy Institute found that in initial union elections, 41% of the time the employer is charged with unfair labor practices.
And I'd say that's a low number.
Yeah, because it's hard to identify a ULP if you're not a union that's dealt with it before.
That's right.
Or has a legal department. But the whole idea of labor relations is supposed to be the ultimate democracy.
Right.
There are unions. Workers, if you want one, you can have one. If you don't want one, you don't need to, like, you don't need one.
You don't have to take one.
But if workers overwhelmingly vote that this is what they want, the system exists to help facilitate that.
Right.
Rather than sitting on the sidelines while a company just spends millions of dollars toying with them for years and years and years until they're so financially desperate that they abandon the effort to make an extra buck and they take 15 cents instead.
Yeah, or they get they wait them out, right?
It's anti-democratic. I mean,
I think that's right.
This wouldn't happen in a political election. It would be the same thing as if somebody got elected and people didn't like it and they like stormed the Capitol or something like that. You just wouldn't see that because it's so outrageous.
Well, actually,
and then
they would get a slush fund.
$1.776 billion.
I like how for the 9/11 commission, right, they like just refused to fund that forever.
They won't pay health care.
You know, for people that literally, you know, put their lives on the line and got sick and died and all that kind of stuff. They just refused to fund that forever and ever and ever. Slush fund for insurrectionists. Cha-ching. Hold on. If I'm one of those guys.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, they've already started to file.
Have they really?
The head of the Proud Boys filed or said he plans to file for $3 to $5 million and says, I'm not being greedy. My life was ruined because I stormed the Capitol and brought all my friends with me. But
I beat a police officer with a flagpole and I should get paid.
The thing that I haven't heard is anything from all these folks who complain about spending tax dollars on science or spending tax dollars on, you know, public health. Like, that's a waste of tax dollars. What about this? This guy filed a lawsuit for $10 billion that was going to get dismissed because it was in coordination with the DOJ headed up by his former defense lawyer. So before the case could be dismissed, it was settled to give him $1.776 billion to give to bad guys, and him and his family and his company will never be audited by the IRS.
I mean, that one is nuts.
That might be the most corrupt thing. That's a little, I try to avoid hyperbole, but that's one of the most corrupt things I can imagine happening, a president giving himself immunity to
cheating taxes. Where do we file? I
don't know.
I really feel like I was wronged.
Were you wronged?
Yeah.
By the Biden administration?
For sure.
Yeah. I didn't get invited to the Christmas parties or anything, and it really made me sad. Right around the holidays when my family needs me to be happy. Sad Ed Christmas shopping, everybody suffers. Bad presents all around.
I'm just going to apply for it.
Yeah. It's like those PPP loans.
But I don't think it's been approved yet.
I don't know.
I don't think it's been approved, but I think he's going to go around and go, I don't need your approval.
Well, who has to approve it?
I don't know.
The Attorney General, I think, has to approve legal settlements.
Look, he said that nobody needs to approve repainting the reflecting pool that doesn't reflect anymore.
That thing looks really bad.
Looks terrible. Way to not use union painters, by the way. And now he's going to build an arch that will obscure the view of the Lincoln Memorial and somehow guarantee there's going to be a picture of him on there.
Build arches when you win something.
That's a good point.
So I think he's got to figure out something to win.
He needs a win.
Yeah, I mean, maybe in Iran he figures if he doesn't lose, that's a win. I don't know. But
he likes the golden arches.
That's for sure.
Hey,
keep eating them, Donnie. Keep eating them.
Yeah, eat more.
Yeah.
All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to wrap it up with a double back-to-back bad person of the week right here on 720, The Workers' Mic, WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. We got to finish this up.
Yep.
Last week, you guys talked about the
villain of the week.
The villain of the week, who has managed to become villain of the week twice. And I think I got to give her credit what credit's due. It's the first time ever that we've had back-to-back villain of the week.
It's a soft double because I feel like the first time we gave it to her because something she was going to do, and then she did it, and we gave it to her again.
Yeah.
But I don't care. There's
don't
no
care
rules
either.
On villain of the week.
She's a Democrat. She's a governor of California. Her name is Abigail
Spamberger.
She vetoed the restoration of collective bargaining rights for public employees in the Commonwealth, not state, but the Commonwealth of Virginia. And you know when that started? It went away in 1946 when black workers at one of the hospital systems organized.
And, really?
And, yeah. Virginia.
So it was more race-driven
No question about that. And then in...
80 years later.
And then in 1977, the Supreme Court said, can't do it, you know, unless the legislature explicitly recognizes it. And then in 1993, they codified the prohibition into state law, banning it, right? Mm-hmm. So this is like, you know, this is a long time coming. You know, municipalities, they could have their own collective bargaining ordinance, blah, blah, blah. And this would have expanded that and say, look, it's not no longer opt in.
Yeah.
It's opt out, or, you know, just everybody's got the right to do it. And she, you know, got in front of the cameras with the unions. Yeah, this is going to be great. And then what does she do? She vetoed it. You're a Democrat.
I know.
Yeah, so what's the matter with people? So,
boo. You got an extra boo from me.
Abigail Spamberger. All right. So anyway, that's it. We got to go. Happy Memorial Day for everybody. Enjoy it. Be safe. And make sure you stay hydrated. And we'll be back next week with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.